in Sanger, Texas, a brakeman on the Baltimore and Ohio Railroad. He got a bottle of medicine on Monday night, and on Friday he came down with this in a tin can. I washed it and measured it, and it's a tapeworm that measures just over 16 feet in length. And I have Mr. Adams' sworn statement that he used no other medicine but the hospital tonic and the passing of that worm. Now, there is just one more thing that I'd like to say about the product. Then I'm all through. One thing that I think makes it stand head and shoulders above anything else on the market, but I can't say much about it before the mixed audience of ladies and gentlemen. But I will say just this. If there's a man within the hearing of my voice that goes to his home tonight, and he sees that poor wife, sister, mother, sitting there with her head tied up, and you say, "What's the matter, Mary?" And she says, "Nothing, nothing at all, John." Don't you believe there's nothing the matter. There is something. Something she's not going to confide in you. She's not going to tell you all her troubles. Well, you know the disposition of a woman. The majority of them will drag themselves around as long as they can keep going. Finally, they break down, and then you have an invalid to take care of the balance of your days. Friends, I talk to you like I would my own mother, my own folks, in my own home. If I thought it would do any good, I'd get down on this platform on my knees. I'd beg you to take that woman home a bottle of tonic. Oh, friends, if you've got one like that at home and you see she's on the toboggan, on the downhill path, and you want to bring the roses back to her cheeks, make her step, pick up, make her feel like she should again, you take my advice and take her home a bottle of that tonic. The price is so low, you can't afford to miss it. The price is $1 a bottle. If it doesn't help you in 3 days, then it won't help you in 3 years. You bring it back to me, I'll give you another dollar for the bottle. It's $1 a bottle, 100 votes for the most popular lady or baby in the community included with every bottle. You just raise your hand, turn on your lights, and I'll be glad to wait on you. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Dr. Bloodgood last toured, 40-odd years ago with your medicine show? Right.
In fact, that's the last time I had done the pitch until I got here. That's
right. And some of you that were at the Folklife Festival last year may have remembered the medicine show that was recreated as part of the activities on the grounds then. Dr. Bloodgood is shown in the picture to the right here when he's working on a geek show, and he gets the doctor's name because his degree is actually only the white coat that he wears and the stethoscope around his neck.
I did attend Northwestern, of course.
Right. Yes. He did go on to other careers also, and we brought him out of his retirement from the medicine show business of 40 years ago to come down here. I'm now going to bring on John Bradshaw, who is actively in the business. He's been in the sideshow business for about 8 years now, and he will explain a little bit about some of the setting for the sideshow and some of the terminology and pitches that he does every summer that he goes out on the road.
All right. Thank you, Dick. Now, ladies and gentlemen, there are some important elements when you're doing a pitch or an opening. That's what we call a bally, or that's what we call when we get in the sideshow and try to get you to spend your extra quarters also. And when you're doing a pitch or an opening, the first thing you have to do is attract the people's attention. That's the very first thing. And you can use a girl with a snake, you can use a magic trick, you can use a fire eater, or you can just use the setting on the stage of maybe we've had the girl come up with a sword, even though she didn't swallow the sword, the other girl was inside. Or I've had, on times where I didn't have a lot of help, have one of my roughies, one of my canvasmen, put a bag with one eye hole over his head. We never said anything about him, but it drew a crowd. The next thing you find out is nothing attracts a crowd like a crowd. If you see people watching something, then you're likely to stop too. And that's why all sideshows on carnivals these days, and always have been, have what's known as an open front with a teaser so that you can't see what's on the stage. In other words, you can see the people standing in there watching the show, but you can't see very much of the show. You might get a little bit of it. We tease you a little bit with it. And that not only lets you see a crowd in there, that lets you know you're safe and that we can't get you in there and kill you because you can get out. You can see right out. And that's an important thing, really. The next thing you need to do, after you have built your tip, after you've had somebody to stop them, you have to give them a reason to stand there and to stay there. And one was with a promise, if you stand there and watch for the next 2 or 3 minutes, I'll give you more show than any other midway will give you for your hard-earned money. I'll actually pay you for listening, and before you leave, and this would be one of them we'd do, we'll have the young lady swallow the sword. If she doesn't swallow the sword, you're all going absolutely free, so you better swallow it. I don't think she saved enough money this season for that. You hold them there so you can impress upon them why they should spend their money to see the show. And if all you're doing is talking, no matter how good a word picture painter you are, no matter how good a talker you are, and we always use the term talker, never barker, dog barks, people talk, you need something there to hold them. On very few occasions, I once played a spot in North Carolina where we were at the bottom of a hill, and they were all so tired walking up and down the hill, all you do is say, folks, stand there a minute, let me tell you about the show. But that's a very rare occurrence indeed. North Carolina people are noted for being pretty patient. They don't usually spend their money, but they'll listen to you. Well, you get down there when the tobacco crop is off, you're just out of luck. The next thing you have to do is make it sound enticing. And again, you paint your word pictures. You use your alliteration. For example, if I were doing a blade box pitch, I would say she's in the cramped confines of that coffin-like cabinet. And as Dr. Bloodgood would tell you, you never use one word where four will do. You always say she's trapped, twisted, bent, contorted, instead of she's laying in there. You know. The next thing you do is give them a reason for going now. You jam them in. That's a jam. You say, you go in now, you'll see the full show. It's just getting ready to start. Or more importantly, if you go within the next 3 minutes by my watch, you all go in on a half-price kiddies matinee ticket of $0.50. If you walk around the midway and come back later, you're going to pay the full admission price of $1. That gives them a reason to go in. The other important things are to look at the people. If you see a talker with dark sunglasses, or if he's doing like this, and ladies and gentlemen, you're going to go inside and see it all, he's not going to turn very many people in. And those sunglasses hinder you from seeing his eyes. If you've ever had an animal at home, when you put on the sunglasses, kind of didn't want to get as close to you. It's a natural reaction, not just human. It's a natural animal reaction. And we're all animals, even though we're human ones and smart ones. And the next thing you do is, if it's not a very serious pitch, is you make them laugh. Once you've got them laughing, you've got them on your side, and they get in the spirit of it. If it's a serious pitch, it's just the opposite. You make them a little sad. You make them feel a little pity. You can sell only two or three things. You can sell something unusual. You can sell sex. You can sell sympathy or pity. That's about all you can sell, especially on a sideshow. So that's really the way you do a pitch. And if you have any questions, I'd be glad to answer. Maybe you want to know something about the carnival or circus life or sideshows or how one gets into the business. We're taking applications now. And if you have any questions, ask me. I'd be glad to answer. Anybody have any questions? Don't be shy or bashful because I am. I can't help it. The next important thing on a pitch, of course, is your grind. And the grind is what you keep on saying and on saying. Once you've got a lineup at the ticket box, there's still people walking by. And those people might change their mind if you don't give them a reason to be interested. And you don't want to give them too long to think about it either. You want them concentrating on what you're saying, not saying, well, gee, I really don't have the money to spend for this. I think I'll save it and buy supper tonight. So you say, freaks, wonders, curiosities, they're all real, they're all alive, they all perform, they all entertain. Go right now, we're having a sale at the circus. If you go right now, it's children's prices for everybody. You'll see the frog boy, the fire eater, the lady sword swallower, the human blockhead, the human balloon, they're all real, they're all alive, they all perform, they all entertain. And you keep them thinking about what you're saying instead of letting them get any doubts in their minds that they might not want to spend their money, okay? That's basically what you do when you're doing a pitch or when you're doing an opening, whether you're selling something. If you watch your commercials on TV, you'll notice they never tell you the price till last. They always tell you how great it is, and then they tell you how expensive it is. And very few talkers will say, now, ladies and gentlemen, this is going to cost you half a buck. Now, listen to what I have to say about it. Okay? That's about all I have to say. They're going to have some of the street criers up here in a little while. We have to set the stage for that. Oh, yes. Did you want to say something? I think that's wonderful. Oh, okay. You better, because I can't.
Change of plan. At 4:30 this afternoon, we're going to have some of the street criers who have been working under the canopy tops to your right and my left up here for a narrative discussion. But in the meantime, we're going to bring Bobby Reynolds up here to do some of his pitches, and then Fred Bloodgood to do a pitch for a deep sea diving show. But first, Bobby Reynolds.
I never did a deep sea diving show. I know it's Fred. Hi, now I got to get a crowd together. Will you folks move down here? Watch, we're going to. No, ladies and gentlemen, let me set the mood. We have 120 feet this way, and 120 feet this way, 10 foot wide, with big pictorial paintings like this. And then in back of that is a 40 by 120 tent. And outside on the platform is similar to this, and this is what you call a circus sideshow, which is one of the oldest American, it's the truest American form of entertainment. Look it, we're going to bring out the sword swallower, we're going to bring out the entertainers. Bring them all out. Bring out the swords or the fire eater, and I want, yeah, bring her out with the small snake. Ladies and gentlemen at the festival, gather down close. You people, hurry up. We're going to do it right now. Gather over here right now. We're going to have a free show in front of the big circus sideshow. We're going to bring out the Osterons, the Minerons, and the Australian Whipcrackers. Now watch this. Move right in close. Fill up the gaps, please. Right down here. I want you to be the first ones in. Watch it. Fill up the gaps. Right over here. Watch the dollar. Hala kila. Watch the dollar. Is that a real dollar, kid? Hold that for a second. Thank you. The second's up. Now watch. Now watch the dollar. Moving close so you can see this. Bring out the sword swallower. Bring out the fire eater. Get them up. We're going to have a free show. You folks, move over this way so the people from the street. That's it. Move over. We're going to do it. When I lift up the curtain, you're going to see that strange little girl. Sakan over here. That's it. Move over this way so you can see it. When I lift up the curtain, you're going to see that strange little girl. Watch the dollar. Watch the dollar. Here's a trick that I had the pleasure of doing in Washington, D.C. before the president of the United Underwear Company. Now watch the dollar. Keep your eye on me. I'm a wizard. Now watch the dollar. You take the dollar bill. You wrap it around once. Now watch my hands. Everybody, come on, the last time tonight, we're doing it. When I lift up the curtain, you're going to see. Move down and close. Come on, right now, hurry, lozenge gain. Watch this. You take the dollar bill, you wrap it around once, you wrap it around twice, you wrap it around three times. Now moving close, you can see it. Move right down close. Watch this. That strange little girl, watch the dollar. Notice my fingers. As I work here, my fingers never leave my hands while I work. Now come on in close. It's free over here. Watch, come on. Oh, you come on, hurry up. They're going to bring out the sword swallower. Watch the dollar. Watch the dollar. We're going to do it here now. Watch. You take the dollar bill. We're going to watch it. Move in close so you can see this. Right over here. You take the dollar bill. We're going to place it inside. You watching me, kid? Good. Watch the dollar. Watch the dollar. Every move is a work of art. Watch this. Bring out the sword swallow. Everybody at the festival, come on over here. Hurry up. We're doing it. That's right. Now, why? Yeah, can you get her out with the snake and bring out the sword swallow? Ladies and gentlemen, while I'm waiting for more of the entertainers to come out, I'd like to remind all of you that you are standing in front of the big circus sideshow. Everything you see pictured on that side and everything you see pictured on that side, you will see inside positively alive and just as advertised. I could tell you about our fire eater that takes a cup of gasoline, puts it in his mouth, and whoom! Out comes a ball of fire, just like a volcano. The sword swallower that swallows down the blade. The snake charmer. We have a girl in here who has a boa constrictor snake as big around as the calf of my leg. And when she takes that out of the box, puts it on her shoulders, it'll send chills up and down your spine. I could tell you about all of them, but here's one I want to call to your attention. Is the Iron Tongue Man. Now, I shan't insult your intelligence by saying he has a tongue made of iron. It's not so. He has a hole in his tongue, just like your girls pierce your earrings. Puts a hole, hook through the hole in his tongue, lifts up a weight, and swings it back and forth. But as strange as he may be, Kokomo the mule-faced boy, the lower jaws, the protruding teeth, and look and resemble that of a mule, the most fantastic mutation ever to be presented to the public. I could tell you about Lola, the leopard-skinned girl, but here's the one I want to call to your attention, is Fat Alice. Fat Alice from Dallas. She's so big and so fat, why, it takes four men to hug her and a boxcar to lug her. And when she starts to dance, she quivers like a bowl of your grandma's jelly on a cold frosty morn. By golly, if that don't make you laugh, there's something wrong with your laughing apparatus. Listen, you're going to see all of that and all of that. Ticket sellers, put away the 50-cent tickets. Don't sell them. For 2 minutes, don't run off to Nathan's and get yourself a hot dog. Come back later. You're too late. For 2 minutes and 2 minutes only, as long as there's a line going in, let everybody, I mean everybody, go in for a quarter, 25 cents to see the big show. Freaks, wonders, and curiosities. The strange, the odd, the bizarre, the macabre. And that's how the thing went. Thank you. When I was very young, I was about 13 years old. I worked as a magician in a place called Hubert's Museum on 42nd Street. I don't know if some of your older people remember that. It was downstairs in a basement. They had fire eaters, sword swallowers, fat girl, and they also had a flea circus there. And I don't know if any of you remember the flea circus, but it was there, and there are no more left in the country. As a matter of fact, I can still do it, but the first show I ever talked on, 13 years old, there was a guy by the name of Jack Elkins, handsome guy, mustache. He says, "My boy, it's about time you learned how to do this." And he grabbed me by the elbows and put me on the ticket box. And he threw me a little bag of change to make change for the show because there was an extra charge. He says, "I'm going upstairs to have a bowl of soup." I found out later his bowl of soup was, but I didn't care. And here's how it sounded. I'd like to take you back about 30 years ago. Hubert's Museum on 42nd Street. 13 years old, I used to work 7 days a week, 12 hours a day for $21. I never got in trouble. I didn't have time. It's true. Ladies and gentlemen, you all gather in close, please. Thank you very much. Hubert's Museum proudly presents none other than Professor Heckler's Trained Flea Circus. In this enclosure, you're going to see dozens of real live, trained, performing fleas. Fleas that juggle, jump through hoops, play football, operate a miniature merry-go-round. Tiny little fleas hitch to a chariot, and they actually run a race. But the most predominating feature of the entire show is little fleas dressed in costume, and they dance to the strains of music. It is, without a doubt, the most fascinating sight the human eye has ever witnessed. Now, the professor is on the inside, ready and waiting to give a performance. There is a small admission. I don't apologize for it. It's only 9 cents. Fleas that juggle, jump through hoops, play football, and they'd all go in, and I'd close the door, and I'd say, that's all, professor. I scoop up the change, stick it in a bag, and that was it. Now, if somebody come up with a dollar bill and asked for 6 tickets, I blew it. I couldn't make change for that. That 9 cents really fouled me up a little. But it didn't matter. I had fun. Yes.
Okay. Bobby, we're now going to have Fred Bloodgood give the pitch that he did years ago for a deep-sea diving show.
A deep-sea diving show. I never seen one of those. Oh, good. I'll listen. Thank you. Have a nice day.
Thank you, Bobby.
Thank you very much.
One of the exciting things here is, as these guys have visited with each other and talked about the old days, or cutting up jackpots in the parlance of the carnival world, various things come back to them. And last night, or yesterday afternoon with Fred, one of the deep-sea diving pitches came back.
Right. First, I want to say that all of the talkers back here, and incidentally, you will see some of the greatest conglomeration of freaks and curiosities and monstrosities right on this platform that you will probably see on the inside. But we all do have one thing in common, and that is that we really love to do this. You know, they say you can't go back, but really we have. I've gone back 40 to 50 years this week, and it's a real thrill, and it's a pleasure to talk to you people because you're so receptive. And all the time we've been talking, these various things come back to you, and it's nice of you to listen. I appreciate that. What we're going to try to do is to show you the alliteration that is in any kind of a pitch or the euphonious phrases. And I've picked out just a couple of these because I think this deep-sea diving show is kind of fascinating. You know, what I used to do is have a regular Navy deep-sea diving suit with a gentleman in it out here on the Midway. Then we would pump up the air into this suit, turning off the valve, of course, here, until we had a man about 7 or 8 feet tall in this diver's suit with the lead shoes walking around here. Now, picture, if you will, a scene like this in the Middle West, which is 1,000 miles from the nearest ocean. They've never seen a deep-sea diver. And then I explain about some of the problems that the diver has, and I say I could put enough air against this young man's body to make him bleed from the eyes, ears, nose, and mouth. The diver encounters many, many dangers. Let me just give you a couple. Supposing this young man right here were down maybe 30, 40, or 100 feet below the surface, and the airline become fouled. A hole could become torn in that suit in some manner. Why, he'd be caught like a rat in a trap, and there's no agency in the world could save that young man's life. And may I step out of character to tell you that it's been just 45 years since I even thought of that thing. Now, why would that come back like that? Anyway, there's one thing that the diver fears above all else, and that's the giant deep-sea devilfish or octopus. And ladies and gentlemen, I did have an octopus down in here, which I'm going to tell you about. And I would describe it as follows. The octopus that I have is the largest ever captured in recent years alive on the Pacific coast. And once on exhibition, I'm going to send the young man down to the very bottom of that steel and glass tank for a hand-to-hand encounter with that death-dealing demon, denizen of the deep. And if he's fortunate, finally bring him to the surface for your very close inspection. Then at this point, I would stop, get very emotional about it, and say, young man, do you realize that in the event of any catastrophe, you will be unable to hold this show responsible in any way? He'd say, I do. Ladies and gentlemen, this young man's mother down in Kentucky, each night as she kneels by her bedside, offers a prayer for the safety of that boy. Put the bell on him, send him down, but please be careful. Now, let me explain right here how I would say that the danger could be assessed as minimal. Because back in there, in reality, let me paint you the real picture of it. Here is a piece of canvas suspended by 4 4x4s, that's all. The water is about here. The very worst could happen if a hole became torn in that suit or the airline became fouled, the young gentleman could only need to stand up and he would be out of the water right up to here. Of course, you can't get executive type people to do this kind of work. For example, late in the fall, especially in Wisconsin and Minnesota, it gets a cold situation and my diving suit sprung several leaks. So for some reason he used to complain about coming out on the platform, standing in water up to here, even when I tried to accommodate him by punching two holes in the toes of his shoes. Tiny little fountains would cascade out of the bottom of his shoes down here. But still he became very temperamental for some reason or other. Well, that's just one of the things that you would see. You would think that you would get a lot of complaints on a thing like that. And all you have to do is register complete astonishment that anyone would doubt the veracity of your statement. But imagine, when you go in the inside, and this gentleman in the diver suit reaches down and picks up a limp, soggy, very, very dead devilfish, dripping with water. Well, you know there's a kind of a groan goes up from the people that expected a hand-to-hand encounter with that death-dealing demon, denizen of the deep. And you'd wonder how I happened to be standing here today, or why I didn't get eliminated right then. They'd say, well, you said it was alive. I didn't either. I said, I'm sorry if you got that erroneous impression. Where did you get that? I heard you say, no, I'm sorry. I didn't say that. It was the largest one ever captured alive in recent years. Recently, of course, it did finally die. In fact, I would say this, that the only alive devilfish or octopus is in the New York Aquarium, where they pump oxygen to it all day. And obviously, we couldn't do that. I'm sorry you got that impression. Very sorry. Of course, he couldn't help but do that. But when he brings it up, there is a little problem about that. But it's one of those things. Now, one other show that just gives, and then I'm all through, I just want to give you one more bit, a sample of alliteration. This is a show that you're all familiar with, the Motordrome, and you heard the Commodore describe it. Now, I'm not going to imitate him because you can't. He's in a class by himself. In fact, he has operated these things right up until recently. This goes back 40 or 50 years. But here's the thing I like about a drone. They always, always say, where they race, ride, and drive faster than a mile a minute on that straight up and down wall, dipping, diving, defying death at every turn, where the mile a minute girl rides. Now, do you remember how many alliterative phrases there are in that? I guess that's what makes this so fascinating. I went to the circus with my dad when I was 7. And right that moment, when I saw that, the circus was great, but the sideshow, that's what appealed to me. And as I stood there, I said, this is the occupation for me. Why, to be able to stand in front of a long line of pictorial paintings, pointing like that and extolling the benefits to be actually derived from witnessing that congress of freaks and curiosities and monstrosities, I said, that's the greatest thing that could ever happen. And to sell your goods sight unseen and collect the money in advance, why, that's the ultimate in selling, I think.
So you've spoken of your training in selling on the midways. What did you do for the other 40 years of your life after you left show business?
Glad you asked that. I went into the Navy, and when I came out, I was just about at a loss. There weren't any medicine shows. Sideshows were beginning to decline somewhat. So I took the next best thing. I went to work for Sperry Rand selling calculators. And I did that for 25 or 30 years. And you would be actually amazed how very little difference there is between selling a limp octopus or a geek in the pit.
I hope there's no one from Sperry Rand here.
I hope not either, because my pension check will be canceled next week, I'm afraid.
But folks, I'd seriously pay attention to those television ads you next hear and look at them a little more carefully. Likewise, when you go to the sideshow, and if you wonder about the strange, odd, and unusual attractions that you find appealing, look at some of your television shows. That's incredible and so on. No difference in the thrill and danger that you now turn on to in your television than you would have paid to have seen in a Motordrome. We're going to continue here in just a few more minutes with some interviews and demonstrations of our street criers. They're going to be coming over here in a very few moments. These are the fellows that have been working under the yellow and white striped canopy to my left and your right. I would also direct your attention to the tent to my right, your left. It is the Army Brown tent where movies are being sold. And particularly, I would direct your attention to our souvenir program booklet. Not only does it have a schedule of all the events going on today, but most useful for all of you are little articles explaining all of what you would have seen today. Fred Bloodgood has written an article about the Geek Show that he toured many years ago. There are numerous other articles explaining about the Caribbean people that we have here, the Southeast Asians, the energy program that you see here. And you can read all about it when you get home and know what you've seen here with our souvenir booklet. They're $1. That is less than their actual cost of printing. I think they're 48 pages in length, color photographs on the cover. They're being sold by the vendor with the newspapers over there and at the corner street in the circular blue canopied sales booth. We'll be continuing on the stage in just a few moments as soon as our vendors come over here. I see some of them starting to come over here now. But do come back here in a very few moments.
Welcome back to the American Talkers area. We have a program of which involves a wide variety of American Talkers here today. Up and down this row, we have many of the street vendors that have developed cries and hollers to sell their products. And we've felt that these hollers that they represent are part of American folklore. And we've brought them here to the mall to demonstrate the kinds of selling that they do and the kinds of chants, jingles, poems that go along with their selling. We also have an auction tent and a tobacco auction that we've been demonstrating throughout the day and some films on some street criers in this military green tent over here on the right. And we're hoping to be able to present to you some of the vendors' cries. The vendors are extraordinarily busy right now, and we hope to get some of them away from their stands to come up after we demonstrate one or two of the criers that are up here now. The first person I'd like to put on with you is a crier that is almost really legendary on the American scene, and that's the newspaper seller. Extra, extra, read all about it is a sound that all of us have heard at one time or another on city streets. And Mr. Plochy claims that he was one of the first people to cry extra, extra, read all about it. So I'll have him tell you about that and demonstrate some of the headlines that he would call out for his wares.
Good evening, everybody. I'm just giving you now a little demonstration on how to be a fact. I was a newsboy in New York City 55 years ago, a newsboy. I've sold paper all over the street and in the subway and so on. Those days, it wasn't easy to sell 50 or 100 paper at night, sometimes 3 hours, peddling the paper and everything. Well, we all, with a lot of us, we used to run into each other in the subway or the streets or something. So they used to have, every once in a while, they have, what do you call, extra. Come out once a week, maybe once a month, when somebody do something great, when somebody get killed. It depends on who the person that get killed, whether it's a gangster or what it is, or so on. So I says to that, oh, it'd be a good idea. Those days was no radio, no television, or nothing. Was only the newsboy, and a lot of papers was out, different lot of papers. So I get together with a couple of guys, and I say, hey, come on. We going there. I show you. I'm going to go out and holler extra. You just follow behind me. Well, I give you one of the first one. I go, extra, extra, Lindbergh now seen over Newfoundland. Extra, extra. Another night come out again. Everybody's worrying about Lindbergh flying over. Whoop, watch it there, that sign. Didn't hurt nobody. So the next night, oh, Lindbergh, now it's over. Newfoundland, extra, extra. Well, Lindbergh now flying over Paris. Extra, extra. Well, I don't want to take up much of your time and everything because just the business so on. But I want to tell you how Smithsonian, my very good friend, who's here, Mr. Steve, right here, put on there. I had him to put on the brakes or anything. Well, anyway, World War II breakout, I went and volunteered in the Merchant Marine. And in 1969, I retired. I found myself wandering around, and believe it or not, I was sitting in a newsstand again downtown and so forth. Now my friend was going on the bus, and I come up and says, oh, yeah, all these people going by, nobody buying paper. Extra, extra! War being bombed, blown up in London. Oh, read all about it. Iran embassy blown up. Thank you very much, and that's my devastation.
Mr. Plochy was a newsboy when he was a young boy and then went back to it later in his life after working with the Merchant Marine. Another of the choirs that
Excuse me, I'm trying to... I forgot all about how I told that Mr. C was Russian going there. And when I holler out about the big explosion in London and so on, he put on the brakes so fast, and he stood there for a good while. He couldn't move. Then he seen everybody buying the paper and says, pardon me, could I get you to come to Washington? Thank you very much, Steve. I'm glad to come here. Such nice people like you all and so on. Thank you.
Thank you. Another vendor we have with us today is Mr. Marcus Johnson. He's the one that is from Washington, D.C., and he's the legendary balloon man. And we'd heard about him for years and years before we ever met him, and we're really happy we managed to catch up with him finally and bring him out here so he could tell you some of the chants he uses to sell balloons and, before that, hot dogs and peanuts at the ballpark. Here's somebody who's been around Washington a long time and has helped contribute to some of the sounds of the city.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Well, I always try to say something to make things sound interesting when I'm selling them, attract attention. So, well, I started at the ballpark here. I went out to the ballpark and listened to people cheer. I was getting ready to work. So I thought, I think I better wait until the people stop cheering and then say something interesting. So after people stopped cheering, I came down behind them on the stand saying, it is time to eat, drink, and be merry. Get your drinks from me. Take care of your thirst and relax with a nice, cold, refreshing Coca-Cola. They are real refreshing. Now, that's the only thing I was selling, though. I sold hot dogs sometime, or peanuts sometime, but it was always time to eat, drink, and be merry. So let's enjoy these nice, nutritious peanuts. They are nice, delicious, and nutritious. Better try some. Everybody loves to enjoy these nice, nutritious peanuts at the ball game. They are real nutritious. Now, after I stopped doing what I was doing at the ballpark, I started, got out in the street, and the guy saw me. He said, you can sell anything. Why don't you help me sell some balloons? Well, I wasn't doing anything, and I needed some money, so I decided I'd go try to sell balloons. I never thought about that. So after I got out there and started, I liked it. So this is one of my, the spiel I do whenever I'm selling balloons, calling the different kind of balloons I have at that particular time. So today I have some, I demonstrated anyway. They are big, they are beautiful. The stars, Humpty Dumpty, he diddle diddle, Jack and Jill. Old MacDonald had a farm. They're beautiful balloons to decorate. They make their pretty little ones happy. They make the lovely ladies happy, make the children happy. When they make the pretty little one happy, then everyone's happy. That's including the little ladies. Pick them out, get them now. Don't forget to make the pretty little one happy. When the little one is happy, then everyone's happy.
Thank you. In just a moment, we'll be having some of the other street criers that are here with us today. We hope to get Tommy Walton on stage, our hot dog man from St. Petersburg. We also hope to get Alton Meachin, the medicine man, on stage in just a moment. Let me tell you how I met the gentleman that's sitting next to me on my right. I was actually down in Anderson, South Carolina at a flea market visiting the medicine man who works over here on the street crier's row for us and who's approaching the stage at this very moment. And as I was walking down the flea market row, a man asked me if I wanted to have my glasses cleaned free. And I couldn't resist it at first, and he started cleaning my glasses. And the first thing I noticed was that he had a dog on his stand with eyeglasses on. And you can see that very dog that I saw down in Hickory and Anderson over here on Street Crier's Row as well. And I immediately saw that for all of the gimmicks he used of having the glasses cleaned and having his dog with his eyeglasses on his stand, one of the things he used most effectively were his words. And so I thought I'd just turn you over to Randall Johnson, who uses words, a dachshund with glasses, and an eyeglass, a free eyeglass cleaning to get his customers down in the markets. Here he is, Mr. Randall Johnson.
Thank you. When I was a small boy in Jacksonville, Illinois, that's 20 miles from Springfield, the capital, my grandmother had a great influence on my life, and I used to go uptown with her shopping. And when I was a small boy, I'd oftentimes see men around the street corner, around the square, and they'd have beside them a little dog running. And he had glasses on, he'd have a man's cap on with a bill, the dress cap as they wore in those days, and he'd have a pipe in his mouth, and he'd have sometimes the dark glasses on as well as the clear ones, and or a cigar in his mouth. Now, this was quite prevalent in my day as a boy, but you don't see that anymore. So that's where I got the idea for my doggie on the booth to attract attention, was to have a dog with glasses on, because I can associate it with the eyeglass cleaner, which is made by the original formula is made by the University of South Carolina and tested in the research and testing department, and they also have a medical school. So you're safe if you try my eyeglass cleaner, you see. Well, of course, I've taught school, and I've been in other professions. I haven't given any of those up. I still follow them, and I just do this part-time. But one time when I was very unhappy with the situation I had, and there could nothing be done about it, I resigned. And just as soon as I resigned, I met a man who was selling eyeglass cleaner in a department store in Greenville, South Carolina. And he invited me up, and he is a retired construction man from Florida. He didn't like to live with his wife, said she was too cantankerous. But he liked to travel, and he liked to see the countryside. So he was selling eyeglass cleaner in J.M. Field Store. They're bankrupt now. They're not running anymore. And I asked him, well, I don't know, why does he do this? Oh, I like to see the country. I get to travel around. And I said, well, how do you get into this if you wanted to for a short time? He told me. First thing I knew, here came the company from Virginia down to South Carolina to introduce me to it and show me how to work it. Well, there it was, stuck. I couldn't say no. But anyway, I just do this part-time. But anyway, when I met Amanda and Steve at Hickory, North Carolina, on one occasion, Amanda was standing back looking at me. I believe she had glasses on the time, if I didn't remember properly, or Steve did, or some of them. And I said, come on up, get your glasses clean. And they stood there and grinned, you know. They didn't know whether to come or not come. He who hesitates is lost. Come up and get your glasses clean so you can see a lot better. It repels the dust, dirt, and lint, the steam, the fog, the grease, the oil, the film, the carbon, the tobacco smoke, and everything else that floats in the air, including the rubberized lint when you're around a tire recapping center, because it repels that too. And if you're in the mill, it repels all the cotton lint that floats around, as well as the steam and fog. Why see half safe? Why don't you see 100% safe? Why do you just want to see the things in half your life? Why don't you want to see all of them? Come up, get your glasses clean. I'm working my way through college. Don't you want to help me go through college? Well, what are you studying? How to sell eyeglass cleaner.
Thank you. The next vendor that we have here is our medicine man, who is up here from Anderson, South Carolina, from his itinerant journeys through Anderson and Hickory and Elizabethton, Tennessee, where he's one of the last patent medicine sellers that we know of. And he has a pretty much constant patter that you can hear under his tent. And he's just going to give you a little bit of the singing pitch that he's developed over the years to sell medicine.
My name is Alton Machen. I'm the man that's in the business selling medicine. I'm picking it up from professional, from my parents and my people. And I'm doing something that I like to do. It makes me feel good. I'm waiting on people. They love my product because I think I have the oldest product it is in the world, which I know I do because I checked it from Genesis to Revelation, from A to Z. And I know it's okay because I believe in it. Because the Food and Drug Administration and Medical Health Association behind me by 100%. That's the reason why I can sell it 100% satisfied. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to sing a little song. I have a girl. Her name is Lucille. And I love Lucille. But when I met her, she was tired, worn and worried, and run down in Ealing. Well, I sang to Lucille, and this is the song that I made up. Lucille, Lucille, take your medicine, Lucille. How's this gonna do you good? And it's gonna help you too. It's gonna make you feel good early in the morning and a whole lot better this afternoon, Lucille. It's gonna make you feel just exactly like that. Feeling good and looking good, Lucille. It's gonna make you think clearly and act wisely, Lucille. Take your medicine, baby. You're looking good. When you're feeling good inside, Lucille, you are so beautiful, baby, on the outside. Take your medicine, Lucille. It's gonna make you do the things that you wanna do, Lucille. It's gonna make you make love, make it love, Lucille. When you're doing the things that you want to do, making love, making love, you are satisfied, Lucille. Take your medicine. Take what your doctor prescribed, Lucille. It's gonna make you feel that way. It's gonna make you look that way, looking good. Take your medicine, baby.
That was great, Alton. That's one of the best renditions I've heard of it. Alton is 70 years old, by the way, and he does take his own medicine, and he's incredibly healthy to be able to run the kind of operation that he does at that age. The next vendor I'm going to introduce is a hot dog seller from a stadium in St. Petersburg who also sells vegetable in Florida. He's going to give you some of his chants, and he's going to sing you a song to close the American Talkers program for the day, if nature allows here. And he has to get back and sell some hot dogs, so I'm going to put him on right now.
How y'all doing? I'm from way down south in Dixie. Hail from a little old place of about 125,000 in St. Petersburg, Florida. So nice to be in Washington, D.C., the capital of the U.S. of A. Never thought I'd make it here, but by the help of you people and Christ Jesus our Lord, I'm here. I'm in Washington. I don't know what I'm doing here. I ain't got too much to offer. I'm just an old fruit peddler down there in St. Petersburg, and I work around just about all the stadiums throughout the country selling hot dogs in my different wear. First of all, I'd like to say we want to show you all how we sell vegetable off our vegetable truck. We have a vegetable truck. We go from door to door. You have to get started 4:30 early every morning to get over there because somebody be done hogged up all the good stuff, you know, and you get the scrappings. And ain't no need of taking that truck nowhere down the road if you ain't got nothing but some junk on there. And by the time the people get through feeling the junk anyway, you got to throw it away. So you want to get nice, firm tomatoes, apples and oranges and cucumbers and a little of this and a little of that, you know, and a little of everything. And we go down the road and we begin to holler on the vegetable truck like this. He didn't mean no vegetable man, yo. Well, I got the vegetable. Lord, I got the vegetable. Somebody say, what you got, vegetable man? He got peas, beans, greens, apples, cucumbers, squash, bananas, corn on the cob, white taters, sweet taters, agitators, dictators, all kind of taters, y'all, watermelon, cantaloupes, little of this, onions, little of that. I got everything on this truck. There's a man going around selling fresh vegetables. He got a wow, 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 wow. Oh, watermelon. Wow, 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 watermelon. Cantaloupes. I got a little of this and a little of that of y'all. Peas, beans, greens, apples, cucumbers, squash, collard greens, turnip greens, mustard greens, mustard greens. And everybody start coming out with the dish pans and the bags, shopping bags and everything. But we go in the stadium, we start selling hot dogs. Here the hot dog man, y'all. We got dogs, dogs, doggone dogs, your dogs, my dogs. When I say my dogs, I'm talking about these dogs here, and they showing up hurting now. We got hot dogs, your dogs, my dogs, everybody's dogs, north, east, south, west, dogs, all kind of dogs, underdogs, overdogs. Hot diggity dog, y'all, get your dogs right here. We got all kind of dogs. That's my favorite call right there. I should have got a hand clap for that. Hot dog, y'all. Thank you. I'm going to sing a little song for you now. Somebody asked me this morning, say, hey, Mr. Walton, you don't never get hoarse. I said, what for? God gave me this voice to talk with, and that's what I'm going to use it for. I'm going to sing something now, though. Everybody seemed to like the cornbread song so much, the butter bean song. Steve called it the cornbread song, got me calling it that. Well, just another bowl of butter beans. Pass the cornbread if you please. I don't want no collard greens. All I want, another bowl of them butter beans. Well, bread and gravy is all right, and the country ham is a delight. Oh, my children always scream for another bowl of them good old butter beans. Well, see that lady over there, the one with the pigtails in her hair. She's not pregnant as she seems. She's just full of them good old butter beans. Well, just another bowl of butter beans. Y'all can pass the cornbread if you please. I don't want no collard greens. All I want is a bowl of butter beans. Think about it now. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
That was Tom Walton from St. Petersburg, Florida. Before you leave today, you might want to pick up a copy of the program book. It only costs a dollar. I wouldn't do it. Not right now.
Okay.
Okay. I just want to let you know that you should pick up a copy of the program book if you haven't gotten a chance to yet. It only costs a dollar. You can buy it from the newspaper vendor down here on Street Criers Row. Thank you very much. It will help explain a lot and might be something you can read over and use to recall back these golden memories here at the Folk Festival. Thank you very much for visiting the American Talkers area today. Thank you.